Good morning to all of you. I want to say a special word of thank you to this group. Unlike the first group, there were none of you who came to me to say, the preacher can do the whole Old Testament in 25 minutes, what's taking you so long? Three of your friends in the other hour expressed that to me without much hesitation, and you all have been more reticent. I appreciate that. Secondly, I want to let you know something of what's happening. Russell, in part, this is for you. Barb and I are going to be out of town for a couple of weeks, and we've lined up some people to speak in our absence. Lloyd Atkinson is going to speak next week, and then 3 weeks, 2 weeks later. Tom Williams, who's in the first hour, is going to be speaking 2 weeks from now. And then 4 weeks from now, the last week in May, Olin and Lynn Burrow, whose picture is in the upper right-hand corner of that open box. They are retired missionaries. They spent 30 or 35 years as missionaries in Africa, and when they retired, they moved 2 miles down the road, bought a house, and continued to do exactly what they've been doing before, except they're doing it out of their retirement income. And a few of us are helping a little bit with that. Some folks in churches in Texas are helping with that. So they're going to come in to give a report. They were part of our group for almost a year while they were on stateside assignment. We know them well. And so we will be here probably for two of those weeks, but we'll be gone for two more. And as Barbara put it, for years we've been telling people when we go to Texas that we're off to the Holy Land and enjoy the misunderstanding that comes from that. This time we actually are going to the Holy Land. And so we'll be a couple of days in Israel as part of this trip. Okay. Yeah. There's some real faithful people in the other class who get the coffee ready. If you, some of you happen to spot that it hasn't been taken down, if you could rinse those things out, that would be a kindness. A few of you have been sort of helping with us with that. We'll trust that that will get done, or else that the pots won't cause the fire to set fire to the whole building. Okay, if you'll find Genesis chapter 29. My goal this morning was to try to take you all the way from chapter 29 up to about halfway through chapter 32. In essence, the tail end of chapter 28, which is what we did the last time we talked about Genesis, had a picture of Jacob with a visitation from God. He had a dream on his way as he was running out of his home, running away from his brother Esau, whom he had defrauded and tricked. Middle of chapter 32, he's on his way back to his home. A period of time has passed, and he has another encounter with God. He's had encounters with God along the way. This is not the only two, but these are the big two. And so what we're looking at now is that interim period between these two big encounters with God. So chapter 29, 30, 31, and the first half of 32. That's what we're looking to do. In the first hour, we didn't get quite all the way through that, so we won't get all the way through that either. I'll keep you all up in the same place. But that's what we're looking at. Okay? And I want you to have a couple of pictures before we start. Number one, what condition is Jacob in as we start chapter 29? He's running away from home. What does he have with him? Probably not much more than a couple of days worth of food, a few days worth of food, and maybe a change of clothing or two. He has been living in for what in that day would have passed as the lap of luxury. He's been the homeboy, the one staying close to home. People waiting on him, people serving him, probably. And his brother Esau was the one who was out in the forest, in the woods, in the open land, hunting and all that sort of stuff. So here he is out in the open country in an unfamiliar place, probably without very many resources. By the time we get back to the middle of chapter 32, he's on his way back home. How much time is covered here? Now, I'm testing you in part to find out if you're reading three or four chapters ahead like you're supposed to be each week. If you read three or four chapters ahead, then each week you'll have some sense of what's coming. You're like my students, you probably haven't done this. Or if you're like my students, you have done this, but you don't remember what you read. Pardon?
When did you assign?
That's been sort of the standing assignment. Wherever we are, make sure you've read three or four chapters ahead.
I must have been absent.
Yeah. I think that probably is true. So anyway, do you know the period of time that goes by? It's about 20 years. It's about 20 years that goes by here. Okay? So we're at the front end of that. He's been a day or so on his journey. He's had this vision of God. Now he's picked up his journey. And verse 29 in my translation says, continuing his journey. They don't tell you how long it lasted, probably a few more days. He reached, my says, the land of the Easterners. What does yours say? The land of the people of the East. Some, I think, says the land of the sons of the East. At least one translation says that. Okay, where is that in relation to where he has been? This is not a hard question.
East.
Over there. Okay, I think I've got myself oriented. Over there. Okay. And there, out in the open, he saw a well with three flocks of sheep lying beside it. How do you know it was three flocks of sheep and not two or four? Probably three separate groups with shepherds and maybe dogs, border collies or something, sort of or Australian sheepdog, sort of defining the groups, right? This well was used for watering the flocks, but apparently not at that moment. Are you reading ahead of me a verse or so?
Yeah.
The stone on the mouth of the well was a large one, and only when all the flocks had collected there did they roll the stone off the mouth of the well and water the sheep. Then they would replace the stone over the mouth of the well. Now, I want you to pause and consider this for a moment. Most of you, I think, have just come from a worship service, and in that service, Travis has walked you through the Old Testament, correct? He told me, I went and complained to him a little bit that he was setting me up for problems. And he said, well, look, I'd skip the first 11 chapters. I didn't do the whole of the Old Testament. I skipped the first 11 chapters. And that is right. That does narrow it a bit. How much time did he give to this section, for example? Six words, maybe, to, you know, this whole stretch of stuff. Are you part of organizations that have meetings? Are you part of a management team that plans how it will manage, or part of a management team where you go to meetings where they plan how to manage you? Have you heard the phrase, we're going to take a look at this problem from the 30,000 foot level? Have you heard that cliche?
Yes.
Okay. What does that mean? That means Travis's sermon in comparison to what we've been doing in here the last few months. Okay? When you're at the 30,000 foot level, you cover this and probably 20 chapters on either side in six or eight words. We're getting back on the ground. I want you to notice. There, out in the open, that's verse 2, he saw a well, and it spends several verses just describing what you're going to see. And not just describing what you see, interpreting some of what you see. There's a well, there's a big rock covering it, there's three flocks of sheep there. The well is for what purpose? For watering the sheep. How many sheep are being watered?
None.
Are you reading a little ahead of me? The stone on the mouth of the well was a large one, and only when all of the flocks had collected there did they roll the stone off the well, the mouth of the well, and water the sheep. Then they would replace the stone over the mouth of the well. How many flocks are there?
Three.
How many need to be there? More than three. We don't know for sure, but more than three. What time of day is it? You have to read a couple more verses. It's broad daylight, which probably means the middle of the day. Jacob said to the shepherds, this is verse 4, friends. Interesting way to start it. Friends, where are you from? And they said, we're from Haran. He asked them, do you know Laban, son of Nahor? They replied, we do. He asked them, is he well? News wouldn't travel very far and very fast. Laban might be dead for all Jacob knows. Terrible things may have happened. Is he well? What did they say? He is. And here comes his daughter Rachel with the flock. Then he, that's Jacob, said, but it's still broad daylight. It's not time to round up the animals. Why don't you water the sheep and take them back to graze? Now, I need you to pause there for a very long time. Commentators at this point will often spend several pages discussing this. Now, I want you to understand, what has Jacob just done? He has just revealed a bias as to how affairs with sheep are to be conducted. This is a culture clash. I have a colleague who I value. Please hear me. I value my colleague. My colleague was hired from another place. And it seems like regularly, she says, in complaining about something we're doing, well, at my former institution, we always did it this way. The first few times, that was charming. Are you afflicted with that problem? That you see something going on and you say, why are you doing it that way? Wouldn't it make more sense to do it this way? I call those suggestions. And my colleagues at UVA, where I've been for 20 years, they now laugh. Because I'll say, you know, have you thought about maybe trying this? And they understand, as far as I'm concerned, that's not a suggestion, that's really a command. They hear that. Here's Jacob. It's broad daylight. Why don't you do it this way? Now, here's his sentence. Why don't you water the sheep and then take them back to graze? To which they replied, first two words, we can't. That's the culture clash. Why can't? There's nothing stopping them from doing that. Except what? Custom. This is the way we do it here. That's the beginning of the things. He's not in Kansas anymore, is a way of putting this. He's in a new place with new customs, and he's come in with his own ideas, and there's already a little bit of clash. However, here comes his daughter Rachel with the flock. We can't until all the shepherds have assembled to roll the stone off the mouth of the well, when we can water the sheep. He was still talking to them when Rachel arrived with her family's flock, with her father's flock. I have the picture that when they had said, there's his daughter Rachel coming, that he sees a spot on the horizon and all the little spots of the sheep around her. Okay. And I have a picture that by the time this verse comes, verse 9, he was still talking to them when Rachel arrived. She's now closed the distance. He's been talking to them. She's been coming from back over his right shoulder. I don't know this, but I'm guessing this. And he finally turns around and he's thunderstruck. What does he notice? When Rachel, he was still talking to them when Rachel arrived with her father's flock, for she was a shepherdess. As soon as Jacob saw Rachel, his uncle Laban's daughter, with his uncle Laban's flock, pause for a second. As soon as Jacob saw, what was the first thing he saw? Rachel. And he recognized, this is a kinsman. What's the second thing he notices? Her flock. What does that tell him?
Money.
Resources, wealth, money. Oh. It wouldn't have mattered if she were good looking, but the fact that she was a bonus. I've had people pampering me and taking care of me all my life. Now hear this. But notice what he does. He springs into action. As soon as he saw Rachel, his uncle Laban's daughter, with his uncle Laban's flock, he went up and, rolling the stone off the mouth of the well, he watered his uncle Laban's sheep. How much effort would that take? A lot, considerable, quite a bit. Take your choice of which way you work. Okay? Does this remind you of anything? Does this recall for you some moment in the portions that we've looked at prior to today? Please say yes. Please say yes.
It was Abraham's servant
sent on behalf of Isaac. But yeah, that's the right one. And what did the servant say to God? Let the girl you have chosen come and offer to water all of the camels. Remember we talked about this for a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
What you're seeing is you're seeing something in Jacob that Rachel might have experienced herself. He says he lifted the stone off. They've made a point. The writer has made a point to tell you that stone was huge. He's made a point of saying they roll the stone away. Not one of them roll the stone away. They roll the stone away. You get this picture that it takes a team effort of some kind to do this.
We also don't know he's messing the tradition up again. Because those other shepherds were sitting there waiting for everybody to come, and we don't know if she
jumped line. She jumped line.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
He's a mama's boy.
He is strong.
He looks like strong mama's boy.
Looks like he gets to crying to her next.
Well, we're getting to that. We're getting to that. Okay. Now, right here, I want to pause. And I want to ask you, before we go any further, to look inside of your head at the mental picture you have of Jacob at this moment. What does Jacob look like? What does Rachel look like at this moment? You got it? I'll give you time. You got that picture? Good. How old is this guy?
70.
Almost 70. Does that match with the picture that you just had? Me neither. I think Olympian athlete, probably not one of the wrestlers, but maybe, you know, an Olympic swimmer or an Olympic runner or something like that, right? Yeah, that kind of thing. Mark Phelps. Some of those. Okay. But one of these, and I think of him maybe 22, 24, something like that. He's pushing 70. Right? Just, I want to just make sure you know, in the background, there's some jarring pieces to this story if you let them come back and emerge back in.
Now we see him lifting that rock a little different.
Well, I don't know.
He was probably a new 30.
I think so. Okay. So, he waters the sheep. He has now done a tremendous amount of physical effort, and I believe he thinks he has now earned a reward. What is his reward? He kisses her. And as soon as he kisses her, something follows. I think you have already said the pejorative. We won't repeat that. What does he do? I want your words out of your translation. He wept aloud.
He seems highly conflicted.
Stick for a moment with your translation. Is there any other translation?
Broke into tears. He kissed her and broke into tears.
Broke into tears. Mine says burst out in tears.
Wow.
Wept aloud, burst into tears.
You said a moment ago, he deserved a reward. She didn't kiss him, he kissed her. I think that's hilarious.
Okay, so my question is, what is going on here? First hour, the initial suggestion was, boy, is he a great actor. I rejected that. I don't think so. What do we have here? I think your pejorative doesn't quite catch it, but it's in that part of the field. This guy's emotional.
But he's always been manipulative, too.
He's been a manipulative son of a gun, and that's what the people picked out. Maybe he's a great actor trying to manipulate her and all this kind of stuff. But he burst into tears. He told Rachel he was his father's kinsman and Rebekah's son. And she ran to tell her father. As soon as he heard her speak of his sister's son, Jacob, Laban ran to greet him. What does Laban do when he gets there? Let's check this out. First thing? Mine says first thing is embraced him. Does yours have that? Second thing? Aha, there we go. Kissing again. A lot of kissing going on. And then what? Brought him home, took him to his house. Jacob told Laban everything that had happened, and Laban said to him, and as you read these words, I want you thinking Adam, when he first caught sight of Eve. Look at the words. What are the words? Bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. It's not quite that, but it's the same thought. That old, ancient phrase that Adam said when he saw Eve, Laban says of Jacob. Okay, so far? Isn't this lovely? We're watching a chick flick. Is this good?
Hallmark movie.
Yeah, in the culture, just as in
as in today.
It's the bursting into tears that sort of took it over the edge for me.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, okay. Now, verse 15 turns out, this is another place the commentators stop and spend several pages. Chapter 29, verse 15 is loaded with much more than might at first appear. After Jacob had been staying with him a month, Laban said to Jacob, "Just because you're my kinsman, why should you work for me for nothing? Tell me what wages you want." And for once, I'd like you to pause right there, and let's just look at that much for a moment. Okay? What's in these words? What's in these words is much harsher than you think. For a month, what's Jacob probably been doing? Sitting around enjoying the hospitality of Laban. And Laban is essentially stating an assumption and then asking a question. What is his assumption? You will work for me. Now, let's talk about what your wages are going to be. It's not, you are working for me and I appreciate it. Let's figure out what we're going to pay you for that. I don't want you working for nothing. That's the way it sounds. The commentators say the language of the Orient, the language of this Eastern world, would have conveyed a very different meaning. The meaning is, you're going to work, boy. How old was he? You're going to work. We don't know. Yeah. It's fascinating. Something. I still think he looks 24. Something's going on here. Genetics is part of this story. I will bring this out more as we get deeper into it. But in any event, he says, you are going to work for me. You're not going to be sitting around anymore. You're going to work for me. And we just have to figure out what your wages are. Okay? So that question is now hanging. Why should you work for me for nothing? Tell me what wages you want. There's the question hanging. The writer pauses. There's not a new paragraph for mine. Mine has paragraph format. There's not a new paragraph. But the writer pauses and gives you information for a couple of verses. What's the first piece of information? Laban's got two daughters. Who are they?
Leah
and Rachel. What do we know about them so far? Leah's the older. Rachel's the younger. What's the next piece? Now, depending on the translation, you can get a very different meaning out of this. There's at least one translation they told me in the first hour where it's Rachel's eyes they're talking about. I don't think so. I think they're talking about Leah's eyes. One translation says weak, and I don't think that's a very good translation. My translation says lovely eyes. Delicate eyes, yours said. I think these words capture better what it's saying. And I have to pause. Have you seen the Seinfeld episode where they're trying to set up George with a blind date? They've got Elaine talking to the girl they're trying to get to date George. They've got Jerry talking to George. They're trying to get to date this girl. Jerry's talking to George, and George asks him after this long conversation, "Does her skin have a pinkish hue?" And Jerry says, "Pinkish hue? It's beautiful. It's just lovely. Does she have lustrous hair?" he says as he puts his fingers through his balding hair. She has hair. What feature of Leah is the writer bringing out for you? Her eyes. There is significance in that. The eyes are the windows of the soul comes to mind and other phrases like that. She has lovely eyes. But it also tells us something about Rachel. And it uses two words for Rachel in my translation. Does it use two in yours? Mine says shapely. Yours says lovely figure. Lovely in form. And beautiful. Okay? If she were just shapely, that would be enough. If she were just beautiful, that would be enough. To have both, that's fantastic. All Leah's got her eyes. But the body and the face, Rachel's got that.
It's not me.
No. My image has been
nice try.
The notes of my study Bible referring to Leah and Rachel, it says the names mean cow and you, respectfully.
For Rachel and Leah?
Yeah.
For Rachel
and Bertman's
family. That changed
my life. Maybe the world was from a different world. To mine, it says her eyes didn't sparkle. It said Leah was older than Rachel, but her eyes didn't sparkle.
And that's picking up on the weak.
Yeah.
The ones that say lovely eyes and the ones that say delicate eyes seem to be saying something else. And the commentators are sort of all over the map on the meaning of those phrases.
I mean, are we sitting here portraying our own image of today's, you know, because like...
Absolutely.
Today teaches...
Absolutely.
You know, but the culture back then, you know, heavy set women might have been the deal. Who knows?
There is a woman we prayed for in the first hour today. I will not tell you who she is. You can look on the prayer list and guess when it comes to you. She, at one point in her life, went back to study in a formal place where she had final exams and all this kind of stuff after she had had her children and was out working and all this kind of stuff. And as part of the requirements of her course of study, she had to have an experience overseas. She decided to pick a place her husband would not go. She chose India. She got to India. This is a lady who is heavy, shall we say. She got to India, and people of India, men especially, would come up to her and want to know if she was married. And when they found she was, their statements were, "Your husband must be rich. How could you be so heavy if your husband were not rich?" She said she came back with a totally different sense of her and her own self-image. And what you're talking about is a caution for us. We are imposing. Yes, we are imposing. And I'm inviting you to do that because I'm trying to get you to see something of the story that's here. There is an entertaining story here. This part of the Bible is meant to be read for the deeper meaning, but it's meaning to catch you by the quality of the story, and it's lifelike, and it rings with authenticity. But we do not know what the cultural norms were for beauty in those days and for what shapeliness might mean. And in our world today, there's different images in different places.
Yeah, societal lies there. It was different from society to society.
But it is Cal and you.
The United States census is totally different from Spain or...
Okay, so let's not lose it. Lay ahead for the moment. Give me this lovely eyes. Maybe you'll read a little more and figure that that's mistaken. But Rachel was, my translation, shapely and beautiful. And my translation said Jacob had fallen in love with. Some translations say Jacob was in love with Rachel. So far, okay? So his answer was, do you have the feeling now? Here's Laban having made the statement. The writer has taken you and stepped back, giving you a little sidebar so you can understand what's coming. So Jacob says, what? I will work for you for 7 years in exchange for your younger daughter, Rachel. Does yours run more or less that way?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, question, why 7 years? Custom?
If you go through the whole of the Bible, you find the number 7 often means completion. So maybe it has to do with that heritage. I don't know.
And they still practice the 7 years in Israel every 8th year. Everything lays fallow, you know, after 7 is completed.
Actually, that's what sabbatical means, is the seventh. It's usually the 7th year, and the 8th year starts the next round. 6 years you do it, and one. It's the same as the week, right? Laban replies, "It is better for me to give her to you than to a stranger. Stay with me." And it's done. What does Rachel think? Please tell me what's in Rachel's head, because this is going to come back with a vengeance at the first of chapter 32. There is something in Rachel's head, and we need to see it right now. She has just been sold.
To a mama boy.
To whoever this is. Don't put Jacob down too hard. I think I've let you put him down harder than you need to. He's still lifting that stone without too much trouble. She has just been sold. Front end of chapter 32, she says to Jacob, we were sold, and the money he got for us really belongs to our children. So it's okay for you to rob him blind. Because here's the arc of the story. This 20-year period, he comes in running from Esau. At the end of 20 years, he's heading back home running from Laban. Because he's stolen all this stuff from Laban. Or at least in Laban's picture, Laban's mind. And his wives are saying, go for it. Because he sold us to you. And he's not treated us fairly in that. There was a bride. There was a transaction.
It's not common for...
The common was a dowry. But he didn't have a dowry. He didn't have anything to give for her. So he said, I will give you work. But what I'm saying is, if you look at it through Rachel's eyes, and the clue is in chapter 32. If you look at it through Rachel's eyes, Rachel sees herself as just having been sold. She may be happy about that, but it's still a transaction, an economic transaction. I will work for you for 7 years, and in return, I get Rachel as my wife. Suddenly, not quite a chick flick anymore. This doesn't sound all that romantic if you see that piece. Everybody still okay? All right. Verse 20. So Jacob worked for 7 years for Rachel. And they seemed to him like a few days because he loved her so much. Back to the chick flick again. Isn't that beautiful? So Laban, of course, has kept count of the days. And when the 7 years are up, Laban says, okay, it's time, right? Nope. Jacob has to go to Laban and remind him. There's a clue there. Laban's just as happy to let Jacob keep going. Jacob's the one who says, and I quote, give me my wife. Oh, please listen to this. This is so romantic. Give me my wife, for my time is up, and I should like to go to her. Oh, come on, guys. That's funny.
This one says, I'm ready to consummate my marriage. Give me my wife.
Mine's a little more basic.
Lay with her.
I want to make love to her.
Yeah. Mine just says, I want to go to her. So what's Laban's response? Laban gathers all the people of the place together, gave a banquet. Horrible word. Verse 23, first word.
But.
Now, what is about to happen sets the tone for this whole 3-chapter section. What's Jacob been doing all this time? Deceiving, conniving, tricking, stealing, defrauding, right? What's Papa-in-law about to do? It's dark. She's wearing a veil. Who does he send in?
Well, it is his oldest daughter who's not married. He needs to be married.
Well, we're going to come to that. That's exactly what he says. Remember the customs conflict? Okay. But when night came, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and he slept with her. Please tell me what Rachel was doing at this point. Please tell me what Rachel was doing at this point.
Might have been celebrating.
Right.
The picture we have is that she probably was crying, protesting, screaming, far enough away that Jacob couldn't hear. Maybe he had the band play a little louder. And I want to make sure you notice verse 24. He gives his daughter a gift. What's the gift? A slave girl by the name of Zilpah. When morning came, this is my verse 25, when morning came, it was Leah! Exclamation point. How does yours do this? Son of a gun? By dawn's early light? When morning came, it was Leah. So Jacob said to Laban, what have you done to me? Did I not work for you for Laban? Why then have you, at about this time the alarm bells are probably going off in his head, why have you tricked me?
Cheat me.
Why did you cheat me? And about that point, he may be thinking. In the first hour, somebody sitting over here whispered at that point, what goes around comes around. The trickster has been tricked. He hasn't exactly met his match. By the end of three chapters, Jacob has come out a little better than you would think. But Laban's not bad. What have you done to me? Did I not work for you for Rachel? Why then have you tricked me? Laban replied, and I sense in this picture calmness.
Right.
Deliberate calmness. As if, why are you upset? I guess you must not know our customs.
Well, yeah, well,
and then it goes into what Jennifer was saying. It is not the custom, there's the word, it is not the custom in our place to marry off the younger before the elder. Finish this marriage week, and I will give you the other one too. Oh, if Rachel is within earshot, what does she think now? Here goes the sale. I'm going to sell you a cow. Sell you a sheep. I'll finish this marriage week, that is, finish the week of honeymoon, and I will give you the other one too. She doesn't even name Rachel. Isn't that sad? He doesn't say, I'll give you Rachel too. He says, I'll give you the other one too in return for you working for me another 7 years. Now we're up to 14 years by the time all this is finished. Jacob agreed, and when he had finished the week, Laban gave him his daughter Rachel as his wife. Now, he gives Rachel a gift as well. What's that gift? Not a slave girl by the name of Bilhah. By the time you finish the story, how many wives does Jacob have?
Two.
Got to be careful. He has four, but it's not four. It's 2 plus 2. Because what happens in the verses that follow is children start to come. The first verse of this next section, that's verse 31 of chapter 29. What happens? And it's very interesting. God is taking a hand. This is ascribed to God's activity. When the Lord saw that Leah was, many translations say at this point, hated. The commentators say that's not a good translation. Less loved is probably the best translation I can figure out to give it. Unloved is what some places give, including my translation. But what it's talking about is, in a polygamous marriage, there will be a first wife, that's now Leah. There will be a most loved wife, that will now be Rachel. And the other wives, in comparison to the most loved, are using this word. So I think to say hated or unloved implies a distance of emotion that's too far. Okay? And I'm not going to this morning tell you why, all of why I think that. But here's the picture. She is less loved.
Before you jump into this, yeah. I know this is a main part of it. To go back to why Laban wouldn't give, give Rachel to him, it sort of, you know, leads back to the concept of inheritance for Esau and his brother, as far as the oldest and the youngest, because in my mind, you know, it states that, you know, in our country, to give the younger before the firstborn is not done. So I'm wondering if that's sort of like, you know, what goes around comes around, goes back.
Oh, I said you're talking about Esau versus Jacob.
Right.
There's hints of that. All of this is tied up. I'm saying as Jacob hears these words, as he's experiencing these emotions, he's got to be thinking about his own experiences and that sort of thing. And it could very well have been that Laban knew something about that, and that there's a pointed reference to Esau and Jacob within this. I hadn't said that, but that's right.
Don't
yes. I think a rational look would say that's at least a piece, if not a big piece, of what's in his mind.
But it's just a week. It's not something.
But I think if you think,
yeah.
He gets a week of honeymoon, then he gets a second honeymoon with Rachel, and then he's got 7 more years of work before he's paid off his. This is indentured servant. This is the term, indentured servant. Okay, how long is he in this situation? 20. So 14 years of all of my work goes to you. He now gets 6 years in which he can work for something else. And that's what's coming in the chapter that we're not going to get to today. That's what's coming next, is sort of how that period of time happens. Okay. Verse 30, I almost skipped over this. He slept with Rachel too, and he loved Rachel more than Leah. That sets up the same kind of problems that Abraham had, Isaac versus Ishmael, same kind of problems that Isaac had, Esau versus Jacob, all that. It doesn't seem to get quite that bad here. And now, I've got just a little bit of time. Let me walk you quickly through this. Starting at verse 31, the Lord saw that Leah was less loved, if you will let me use that translation for a moment. What did he do? He allowed her to have children, keep going, while Rachel remained barren. The children she has, watch their names. All the way through here, watch their names. There will be places where the writer says he was named this, and then it will say this and so was what she said, therefore accordingly she named him such and such. And you can see a connection with the names. The first child she had, Reuben, because the Lord has seen my misery, and she said, now my husband will love me. She has a second son. The Lord has heard that I was unloved or less loved, so he has given me this one too. And she named him Simeon. She conceived and gave birth to another son. This time my husband will become attached to me because I've borne him three sons. Accordingly, she named him Levi. Again, she conceived and gave birth to a son and said, do you notice the change? The first three have all been aimed what my husband is going to think about me. What does this one say? Now I'm going to praise the Lord. And this one's name was
Judah.
Judah is the one that becomes the center of the story all the way to Jesus. He becomes the center of the story all the way to Jesus. Was he the firstborn? Second? Third? But he was the one that when he was born, she finally started thinking about God again. Okay? At that point, she has no more children. Rachel, verse 1, seeing that she gave Jacob no children, became jealous of her sister and said to Jacob, give me children or I will die. Jacob responds, am I God? I don't have control over those kinds of things. So Rachel says, well, take my slave girl, have children with her, I'll call them mine. What does that sound like? It sounds like Sarah and Ishmael way back when with all the attendant problems. Okay? So the children begin to come. God has done me justice. He has heard my prayer and given me a son. That's chapter 30, verse 6. Accordingly, she named him Dan. A second son came from that slave girl. I fought a faithful battle with my sister and I have won. And she named him Naphtali. Well, at this point, Leah gets into action and says, well, I've got a slave girl too. And off they go. By the time this gets finished, they've been arguing about plants that they think can make them more attractive to their husbands. Mandrakes come into the story and they start arguing about the plants and they trade time with Jacob for this. It really gets almost like a soap opera. Okay? But take a look at verse 22. By the way, there is a daughter born here, and you want to make sure you keep your eyes on her. Mostly it seems to be sons, but there's a daughter, Dinah, who is born and mentioned in chapter 30, verse 20. Verse 22, the Lord remembered Rachel. That word doesn't mean he forgot about her and then said, oh yeah, it was, he decided it's time now to do something for her, and she has a son. Who's that?
Joseph.
If you take a look, and this is, we've got to end with this, the arc of the larger story, Abraham, Isaac and Ishmael, and the promise goes through Isaac and Ishmael is set aside. You now have Isaac and it comes to Esau and Jacob. The promise goes through
Jacob,
Esau is set aside. It now comes to Jacob and you've got 11 sons by now. The question's got to be in your mind, which son will the promise go through? By the time the story is over, and these were the 6 or 8 words that the pastor gave to this in his overview today, it's Joseph who becomes the central figure. But if you look longer, Judah's still in the picture, Levi is still in the picture, all of these are in the picture. Joseph is the most Christ-like character in this whole story, and much of the rest of the book of Genesis is talking about Joseph's story. Joseph had an experience almost like Jesus, given up for dead, treated with contempt, thrown away, and yet he came back to power, and with that power he did not crush his brothers. What did he do? He brought all of them back together where all 12 of them eventually go forward together. That redemption, that pulling together seems to have been centralized there. And that's why 2 weeks ago when we talked about I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that word Jacob seems so strange to be there. And I tried to help you understand why that was. The birth of Joseph represents the beginning of something new. It's going to take a while to get there. What do you think is going to happen? We'll take just this much time. Jacob is going to treat Joseph as the favorite son. And the problem that comes is Joseph begins to have reason to believe it. His father is treating him as special. Joseph begins to have visions from God that amplify this. And the things that happen then begin. And the rest of the book of Genesis is going to deal with that. This is as far as we'll go today. We will pick up at verse 25 next time, which will be about a month from now. I commend you to the good people who will be leading you for the next few weeks, and we'll see you when we get back. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, through stories like this, in the detail, we start to realize the characters of the Bible seem to be a whole lot like us. They sometimes do stupid things like we do stupid things, and sometimes a little bit of light comes through and they begin to remember you and give you glory and give you praise for the things that are happening in their lives. We thank you for the guidance that you have on the affairs of men, that the things that need to happen to bring a world that is so lost closer to you do happen, even in the lives of people who aren't perfect. Help us learn from what has happened to them. And help us be sensitive to what you're doing today. We pray all this in your Son's name. Amen.